I completely confess that the way my brain is wired, it's a challenge for me to shut off. But that means all the more I need those spaces of silence and solitude. I know that.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, where we passionately are committed to offering encouragement and new ideas to those on the front lines of Christian ministry. At Romans 12 Ministries, we come alongside those leaders and families fighting for their emotional, physical, and spiritual health, for we firmly believe that healthy leaders lead healthy ministries, and where there are healthy churches and ministries, there will be transformation in communities. Welcome again to the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast.
I remember my dad saying to me when I was younger, don't waste your life away. Usually it was when the sun was out, it was a beautiful afternoon in Seattle, and I was sitting next to my black and white TV watching the Brady Bunch or maybe another 70s classic. Those words come to my mind often as I think about my own time management and what I'm doing with the hours God has given to me. My college tennis coach had this saying on his wall of his office. It read, today is the beginning of a new day. God has given me this day to use as I will. I can waste it or use it for good, but what I do today is important because I'm trading one day of my life for it. I want to be good, not evil, gain, not loss, success, not failure, in order that I will not regret the price that he paid for it. Our guest today is Pastor John Beeson, co-lead pastor at New Life Bible Fellowship. Pastor Beeson seems to model strategies to get the most out of his day of 8,640 seconds. He shares how he intentionally blocks out time during his day for writing, reading, family devotions, exercise, and so much more. You will be inspired to examine your own time management and see how you might rearrange and change some of your current behaviors and habits. John Beeson is married to Angel. They have two amazing teenage children. Is the author of Blogging for God's Glory in a Clickbait World, which is a must-read for those of you who are blogging and who desire to begin one. I'm David Town, your host of the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast. John Beeson, it is great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
You are such a dear friend, and I'm just so thankful for you and how God has wired us together and our stories, and I just really, really appreciate you taking the time to be here because I know you're a busy guy.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a blessing to be here. I so appreciate Romans 12 and all that you do, how you pour into pastors and to the church. Thank you.
It is a joy. It's a calling, and we'd love to lock arms with you and the other pastors in our community. So I always start with the same question, and it is a question. If you've listened to our podcast, which you say you have, thank you for that. You and my mom, no. We're talking about stories of hope. And so when you think back to your journey and your story and those people that have impacted you, who has really modeled a story of hope for you? And how has that impacted you and your faith?
I'd point to two people who have been amazing partners in hope giving in my life. And I'm going to speak kind of recently. One is my co-lead pastor, Greg Levine. You know Greg well. And Greg is a man of hope. He is a man who exudes hope. It is in his pores. And it is a gift to do pastoral ministry with Greg and to walk through seasons and places of life where I see the glasses half full, and he just sees it as overflowing. And it really is a spiritual gift, and I so appreciate that about him. My wife is the other one. My wife is a counselor. In fact, her practice is called Whole Hope Christian Counseling. And her life is a demonstration of the rescue and the hope of Jesus Christ. And she brings, through the anointing of the Spirit, hope into places, into situations, into lives, through her empathy often, through her ability to relate and connect with people. That is just a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, yeah, two things there I want to reflect on. One is with Greg. I hear that you guys are going on a trip to swim with sharks.
We are.
That's crazy. Sure are. There's no hope in that. I don't see any hope in that.
Well, I hope we return.
Yeah, my goodness gracious. I think one of the most beautiful pictures I've seen in a long time was when you shared at our marriage retreat. And what I loved about it was just the relationship and love that you and Angel have for each other. It was so apparent. And that wasn't like smooth sailing the whole time. There were bumps and tough things. And because of those trials, there was just this beautiful love story there.
Yeah.
That really impacted me.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that.
God makes wine, not grape juice.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Thanks for that. The reason I have you on today is because you are such a unique person. I look at you and you seem to live in a way that's more than 24 hours. You shove so much into your 24-hour day that it just amazes me. And so I want us, and I think many listeners want to learn from a person like you, that you get so much out of your 24-hour day, and we want to know how you do it. So my first question to you is, who has modeled for you that thirst of learning that you seem to display?
A number of people. I mean, my mom and dad are both learners, both educators, and so our home was a place of curiosity and learning, and I got that bug young, and it only seems to grow. I love learning. I love growing, and I love discovery.
Yeah, you model that. And so you are a man that has a family. You have these kids. You have a job as a pastor. You have so many things on your plate. Got your extended family. You love activities and you have hobbies. How do you organize your day?
That is really, I think, a crucial part of productivity. And if it's okay, I'd love to back up just a second about productivity, because much of the way the world looks at productivity is as a means of creating an identity and worth. And there's a danger, there's always been a danger for that in my heart. I've always been a pretty like high RPM person. And the reality is that productivity in various seasons of my life, which I would say in a way has always been there. I think it's grown, but it was dangerous in fueling a false identity in what I achieved. The reality is, and you know, this back to Ephesians 2 stuff, right? For by grace we have been saved through faith. This is not my own doing. It's a gift of God, not a result of work, so that no one may boast. But then right on the heels of that, for we are God's workmanship, created in him for good works. And so Paul lives in this world where on the one hand, there's nothing about my productivity, not an ounce of it, that contributes to God's abounding love for me, his grace in my life, his choice for me, and his call of me. And yet, he also purposes each one of us for works, for productivity that flow out of that grace. And so I just think that's a really important thing. So, and my heart at times can wrestle with that. And so... The tips and that sort of thing, as we walk into those things, I just think they have to flow from a place where we're seated in grace and in stepping into those works as a gift. Those works are a gift. Peter talks about them as God's varied grace, meaning like our gifts, the gifts of what we do, are means of grace in our lives. I love that. So let me
interrupt you, because you mentioned that. I mean, that in Ephesians 2, there's 8 and 9 talk about that. And then right there in verse 10, it talks about the workmanship and doing works. That's what we've been created to do, pre-prepared to do. Talk to me more about that, just theologically, why God would do that with grace and works.
Yeah, and the order of that is so important, right? And so grace doesn't flow from works. It's works that flow from grace. And I mean, let's be honest, the human heart is the heart of a Pharisee. Like every one of us, myself included, we're born with the heart of a Pharisee, a heart that wants to achieve the favor of God, achieve the favor of human beings and of God. That's basically all of us in a nutshell. That's me in a nutshell. And yet, what the grace of God is, what the work of God is, what Paul is explaining to us is that, no, you've got it all mixed up. It is just by grace through faith. That's it. That's the foundation of your relationship with me. And yet, that doesn't mean I don't have something to do with you. I have great things to do with you that are an outflow of that grace, that are a gift of that. And it's just a profound, when our hearts can really rest in that, I think it changes the whole way we think about our productivity.
So you're do and all these things and the 100 books that you're reading in a year, it's not because I'm trying to earn God's favor.
I don't want to pretend as though I'm past that sin. I'm like every human being, I'm constantly fighting that. And so I would say I am in a better place than I've ever been in living out those works, living out that productivity out of the overflow of grace. But I am far from a finished product in that way.
Well, I tell you, I really appreciate you backing up like that, because that is so true. Our listeners are thinking, okay, it's obvious when you see somebody that is so, in many ways, successful and productive with their time and what they're able to accomplish and their leadership, then they start feeling guilty. I need to do more.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you started with that, because that is so true, that we've been saved by grace. But there is, with that grace comes great freedom. And then there's just a joy to doing those works.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just talk about reading, okay? Like, can we just talk about reading?
Sure.
What the Sam heck? You are reading and reading and reading, yet you have all these other things. And so tell us, those of us that are having a hard time finding the time, how do you do it?
Yeah, so, and again, this is a dangerous, like, comparison trap here. Because I haven't always read as prolifically as I read now, and frankly, it's a little bit like rolling a ball, meaning the more you read, the more the structure grows, the more stuff like that you've read, and then you're able to kind of process it quicker. And I don't, it's not so much that the number of books matters to me. But it just fits into every part of my life. So I, 4 days or so, I'm working out at the gym, and I'm going to be listening to a book. Some people don't count that reading. I do.
You don't listen, like, you don't have a playlist, the best of the 70s?
I don't have that. So I listen on my commute. I listen in the gym. I read frequently, pretty much every night. I'm going to be reading something, before I go to bed. As a family, during our devotions, we're oftentimes using something in the morning to read, and that's obviously something that's geared toward myself and our family, not just me. But there's always multiple books going for me at the same time. Always, at the very least, a fiction and a nonfiction. But usually more than that. Mm-hmm.
And so I remember us talking a little bit before that you have scheduled time in your day for whether it's reading or writing.
Yeah.
Because you do a lot of writing.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit how you, again, organize your day and how you intentionally put those into your schedule.
Yeah. So I learned this through productivity experts, and I could point to two books actually that are my favorites. Actually, both are Christian authors. What's Best Next by Matt Perman, I love. The shorter kind of Cliff Notes version of that in a way is by Tim Challies, and it's called Do More Better. And both of those are excellent. So I've learned a lot of this from them. This isn't kind of original John Beeson material, but most every expert on productivity talks about blocking your schedule. And I'm a huge believer in that. For me, an important part of what I do, as preaching and writing, is producing something. I have to create content, and for me, that is just not something that gets squeezed in here and there. And so for me, at this juncture, it's Monday afternoons and Wednesday mornings are the two kind of sacred times that I really try to protect as best as I can. And then, you know, when I'm, say, in a counseling mode, meeting with people, I really try to be efficient with that. And I schedule on the hour. And so I honor people's time and I honor the people in front of me. And so I'm not, you know, my mind and heart is, you know, so oftentimes on, say, a Wednesday afternoon, you know, I may have, you know, 4 or 5 hour-long meetings. And what's great for my heart in that is I'm not anxious. I'm not in a place of like, well, I should be creating something right now, because that's time when I'm with people. And so earlier on, I would just kind of create people whenever they could happen, and then I would try to squeeze in productivity. But that actually stole from both halves of that for me. Now, I recognize that not everyone has the ability to create a schedule like that. But I think pastors, there's hardly a pastor I've ever met who's not a people pleaser at heart. And so oftentimes what ends up happening with our schedule is that the tail wags the dog. And so we don't protect ourselves enough. We don't honor the people not in the room. It's really easy for a pastor to, you know, be in his office all day and the phone is ringing and the texts are coming in and the coworker, you know, they're popping their head in the door. And there's nothing wrong with any of those people. But the reality is I know that I have to steward my time for the people reading my blog. Like I have to honor them as much as I'm honoring the people in the room. I need to honor the people who are showing up on a Sunday morning that I'm preaching a sermon to. And so the way that I do that is I really just try to block and protect that time in a more rigorous way than I used to.
Covey talks about the tyranny of the urgent, and that we don't have control over our day, and it's just, whatever is urgent, that's what we do. And in turn, we're just spinning our wheels a little bit. So that intentionality of your Monday afternoons and your Wednesday mornings, do you say to the administrative assistant, hey, I don't want any phone calls? What does that look like specifically?
So oftentimes Wednesday morning, I might be at home actually to protect myself a little bit more. I'll close my office door. Those are things that have felt rude to me in the past, because you know, you want to be the guy with your office door open all the time. And there are absolutely times that my door is open. But the reality is I'm not honoring, I don't think, what God is calling me to in a broader scope by just allowing, like I said, the tail to wag the dog, whoever wants to intrude on my schedule. And not that my schedule is more important than theirs, but we can figure out a time that works beneficially for both of us, as opposed to just going, you know, just being pulled here and there and here and there.
So one of the things that amazes me is that you do the Beehive, and that comes out, is it on Tuesdays?
Yeah, so it actually comes out 3 times now, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
So
yeah.
The Tuesday is kind of your own personal blog, what kind of God has kind of placed on your heart?
Yeah, so now it's Tuesdays and Saturdays are my own posts, and then Thursdays are recommendations of kind of the best of other posts that I've read around the internet.
So not only are you balancing books, but you're also balancing articles. How in the world do you do that?
I rely a bunch on people I trust. And so, you know, I subscribe to kind of the only, I think, only the best blogs out there, people I trust to reliably write things that are helpful and important. And then I subscribe to other people. So Tim Challies, for example, he every single day has his recommendations. And so I'm often he might give 70, 80 recommendations in a week. Well, I'm only giving like 5 or 6. And so I'm going to give you the best of his plus the other blogs that I'm reading.
How much would it cost me for you to follow my blog?
Free.
You're supposed to say I already follow your blog.
I do follow your blog.
Okay, good. Okay. So one of the things I wanted to ask you is that Here the family comes home. They want to watch a movie. Let's watch Netflix. Let's watch old reruns of Gilligan's Island or whatever. So do you participate with that, or how does that work?
Yeah, so and this has evolved over the years. I really trying to protect family meals. So in the morning, we start every morning with a family devotion with all of us, and a time of worship together and a meal together. And I am 100% with my family in that time. Dinners, you know, we have two teenagers, and so whether they're at home or not isn't always the case, but always at least for 3 nights or 4 nights a week, we're all going to be together. And even if it's just Angel and myself, last night both kids are out, as happens, and it was just the two of us, and she's going to get all of me in that time. Now, if we transition, we actually play a lot of family games, and so family games, I'm not multitasking, but shows and that kind of thing, which can happen. This is where I need, you know, I've grown as a communicator with Angel, because there's the time where she wants like us to watch a movie together, and that means this is meaningful time where I need your attention on the movie and on me, John, and I've grown in recognizing those moments. But there's times where we're just kind of watching something a little bit more passively. And absolutely, when that happens, which I'd say is probably, I don't know, 2/3 of the time or something, I'm always reading something, writing something. I'm always doing something at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's good. A lot of communication going on there.
it's necessary.
All right, let me ask you this. Are you forced to watch Hallmark movies?
I do. We do not watch Hallmark movies in our home.
I will give Angel a big hug for that, and maybe she can talk to my bride. I want to talk a little bit about silence and solitude. Hmm. Do you incorporate that spiritual discipline in your life?
So I would say I feel like a toddler. So actually, I didn't do this on purpose, but this morning I actually spent at Redemptorist Center, which a plug for Redemptorist, which is a Catholic center here in Marana, and it's open to anybody. And so I actually spent the morning there in prayer and in the Word. And it's, for me, my goal right now is to do that once a quarter. And I'd love to get to a place where I'm doing it more frequently than that. I have a long way to grow. I completely confess that the way my brain is wired, it's a challenge for me to shut off. But that means all the more I need those spaces of silence and solitude. I know that.
Yeah. And that's something I've been working on as well. And it is very difficult. My mind is spinning all the time. And yet it seems like God is impressing upon me that discipline for me to actually hear Him. And we had a podcast before about just the mornings, about how if you are a morning person, to get up just a little bit earlier, go out for that walk, leave the headphones at home, and just be out and listening and seeing God's beauty all around us. So let's be practical.
I loved that podcast, by the way. And yeah. I am the first riser in our home, and so I so value that space of silence. And for me, it's a space in God's Word as well. So important to start the day that way.
So I want to ask you, let's go specifics now, okay? And maybe that's just weird. I'm just weird, but let's talk about what time do you go to bed? What time do you get up? What those chunks of time that you block off for a pastor that's listening, who's a little bit out of control, spinning out of control, they need to have some ideas. They need to have a rearrangement of their schedule. Help them along now. Give us an idea of what you do.
Yeah, so I go to bed a lot earlier than I used to, and it's actually commitment Angel and I have made through the years of the importance of going to bed together. We think that's just important in terms of protecting the marriage. There are seasons that didn't happen, and that was not healthy for us. And so we go to bed, I don't know, 10 o'clock, and then we are, so I'm up first, and it depends on the morning, 5:15, 5:30, something like that. And I spend that first half hour, I'm typically kind of getting things running for the family. I'm making breakfast for the kids. I'm spending time in the Word. I'm making coffee for Angel and I. And so those are sweet, sweet moments there as the day begins. As the family comes in, we enjoy breakfast together and over God's word and prayer and worship. It's the simplest thing. I'm a huge believer in family worship, but a huge believer in not over programatizing it. I tried for years to, you know, to incorporate all these elements. At the end of the day, the word, good questions. That's my role, really. I need to ask good questions that draw in my family into the word. And then prayer and worship. My kids play instruments, so it's super fun now. They lead us in that time, which is beautiful. And then we're off to wherever we're going. And as I said, a Monday and a Tuesday morning are going to be all meetings for me. A Monday afternoon is going to be me really trying to hunker down, specifically at that point, really in the text that we're preaching. And so I'm going to spend time in prayer, spend time reading through it, spend time hearing it for myself. It needs to convict me before it can convict God's people. And then Wednesday is more often the sermon plus then writing a blog. Now, I often also will end up writing a blog. Often will happen on a Saturday. I wake up on a Saturday, I'm probably up a good 2 hours before anybody else. I pretty much keep basically the same schedule. I just wake up when the sun comes up, and my family sleeps in, which is great. Sweet, sweet time.
Well, that happens when you get older.
That's true. That's true. That's true. So Saturdays are sweet days of, I should back up. Thursdays for us are Sabbath in our home. That is the day that's the most protected day. Wednesday night is our family dinner. We protect that really in a pretty strict way, and strict out of love. Right. And so there's going to be a great meal and a good time, usually a game together as a family. And then Thursday is Angel and my day together. And that often both of us love to read. And so we love to read. We love to work out. I should back up, actually. When I leave the house, I'm typically going to leave the house, go to the gym before I jump in my meetings. For me, gym, it's hard to get that to happen at the end of the day. And so I need that at the beginning. And so Thursdays are oftentimes reading, kind of an extended workout, something in nature or just exercising. That's the way in which I feel God's grace and joy to me. So I think I've gone through all the days. I think that's pretty much it. One of the things, and I would just encourage every pastor to do this, and I was terrible at this early in ministry, is that I honestly think it's really unhealthy for most pastors to regularly have more than two meetings at night in the weeks. Those really honestly impacted me really negatively. And so right now I probably average if you were to look at most of my weeks, I probably only average about one meeting at nighttime in the week.
And that's intentional. You've actually intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I try to flip-flop. The main two standing night meetings for me are connection group and our elder meeting. And so on an ideal week, they fall off on different weeks from each other. And then it's pretty rare that I'll say yes to a night meeting outside of that. I really intentionally work at having that not be the case for me.
I read a study recently about those who get into West Point. And so they did this long, extensive, exhaustive study on what are some common characteristics of those who get into West Point, because it's so hard to get into West Point. And they narrowed it down to one thing. And that one thing was that the people that got into West Point had dinner with their families at least four times a week.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The power of a family dinner, of conversation, of engagement, of thinking. And I think we've lost that a little bit. And I'm guilty of that growing up and being a ministry leader myself. That was something I wanted to share with you, that family devotions. If you have my kids here in the studio and you said family devotions, they would start twitching. Because I did not do it right. It was more David Town talking and them listening and going, when is this going to be over? But sounds like you have, that's a rocking thing for you guys.
It is now. It is now. My kids love it now. It's funny for us early on, so like toddler years, really easy because we did devotions around nighttime routines and those kind of just morphed as they aged. But as soon as they hit those elementary years and they began to be part of sports teams and stuff, then that nighttime bedtime routine wasn't as protected as much anymore. And we really struggled. We tried really hard to make it happen at night. For us, at the end of the day, forcing the family to get up a little bit earlier was the only way that we could really genuinely protect that on a regular basis.
Well, I want to close with a quote. And I read that this morning. And it says, quote, "A pastor is to shepherd with other shepherds. An elder is to accept suffering as part of the call. A leader is called to shepherd from an alongside position. A minister is never a domineer. An overseer is to shepherd with humility." And John Beeson, you model that. And I want to just, I praise God for that, because you model that type of leadership. And I want to thank you for that. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for joining us today at another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast sponsored by Romans 12 Ministries. For more information on Romans 12 Ministries, visit us at romans12ministries.org or give us a call at 520-982-5877. May we all continue to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer.